Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. Today we've got an episode I've really been looking forward to because I just enjoy speculating on the potential of younger players in the majors. Plus, I'm joined by Ron Chandler of BaseballHQ.com and the Baseball Forecaster books to discuss these sophomore players. Hey, Ron, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure.
So, Ron, this is a slower time of the year for me. Football's slowing down. Our baseball content hasn't really kicked into full gear yet. So I have a bunch of side projects I've been working on, getting to tweak some formulas, writing about prospects. From what I understand, though, your new ebook release has been this time of the year, perhaps the busiest time of the year for you.
Yeah, I've been gearing up now for the release this week of the Babs Project, Uncovering the Truth About Winning at Fantasy Baseball, which is launching on Amazon Friday, January 6th. And it's available also at ronchandler.com, which is my current home for all the work that I've been doing recently. So, yeah, it's a look at how we try to analyze players to put together rosters for our fantasy teams and a different way of looking at things.
Guys, it is excellent stuff. For those of you listening who have never read one of Ron's baseball forecaster books, it's an essential read for me every single year. I've read this thing cover to cover every year for a long time. Ron, thanks for putting it together.
You're welcome. It's been a labor of love now for over three decades. So I think I'll keep doing it for a few more years. Yeah. 31st year.
Okay, so moving on over to the analysis, because there's just really never enough time to talk about all these players, especially today, since we're going to be covering an impressive rookie class from last season. We're only going to be chatting about players who lost their rookie status last season. So the Alex Reyes, Dansby Swansons of the world, they'll be saved for another episode. Ron, let's start with three players who all performed well above their expectations last season. And look, I 100% ate crow on Gary Sanchez, who was just mediocre in the minors. I mean, catchers tend to develop slowly offensively. I was just wrong on that one. So sorry, everybody. Then there's Trey Turner, David Dahl. How much regression do you think we should expect from this trio?
Quite a bit, actually. One of the things I love about this class of players is that they're great case studies for us to look at the issues of small sample size and recency bias. You know, most players don't become fully formed entities until they're in the majors for a couple of seasons. And we just love to see these young guys and how they do and try to draw conclusions after just one season or even just a half a season of performance. And quite often we get burned. You know, like last year, Carlos Correa was a first round pick and he went outside the top 70. And I think this year, like every year, we're just so excited about these players that we overrank them. And so when you're looking at players like Trey Turner and Gary Sanchez, David Dahl, they all have flaws. And Turner right now is going in the first round, which I think is pretty crazy. But it's the same. it's the same thing we ran into with Correa last year. Now, one of the things in researching Turner that I found fascinating was the fact that he was batting about 286 in the middle of August last year. And from that point on, 39 of the last 49 games he played were against sub-500 teams.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he batted over 350 against those teams, which you would expect a young player to bat well against poorer teams. Plus the fact that as the year rolls out on, into September, as rosters become more diluted with minor league players, some hotshot rookies can build up a lot of good stats. And I think that's what happened with Turner. I don't think he's going to be able to put up nearly the type of numbers we think he's going to. I think him going in the first round is an overreach. And, guys like Sanchez and Dahl are kind of in the same book, too. So, I would expect it to be quite a bit of regression for these guys.
I was telling people a few episodes ago, I would not take Trey Turner in the first three rounds. I mean, if you're playing in deeper leagues, maybe a third round would be a good fit, but first round is just nuts to me. I remember Adam Dunn, Brett Lowry coming up and just setting the world on fire. I love that you're talking about small sample sizes. Chris Shelton started the year with 12 homers in the first month one year, and he finished with like 16. So Trey Turner going crazy here with a high BABIP. All three of these guys, I'm avoiding them. Someone in your draft is going to draft them too high, and it's not going to be me.
Yeah. I mean, actually, Turner and Dahl both had very high BABIPs, both around 400 last year. So, I mean, those clearly are not going to keep up. I would be very surprised if Turner hit 300. I would be very surprised if Dahl hit 270. Gary Sanchez, I mean, he's interesting too, but if you take a look over the last the final, I guess, 100 at-bats last year, he batted only 220. So yeah. The league was already catching up to him last year. So, yeah, I think we have to be really careful with these guys.
Yeah, once they get the book on these younger players and find the holes in their swings. And look, there's a lot of holes in Gary Sanchez's swings. Just look at his minor league numbers. He was not an elite prospect by any sense, but you know, they found out what to do towards the end of the season, and I think it'll continue this year. I'm absolutely trying to talk people off the ledge with Gary Sanchez because it's going to be I think it's going to be a big drop off this year. Now, both Nomar Mazara, Tyler Naquin, they had some really impressive stretches last season. Mazara's was at the start of the season. Do you see either of them realizing their potential for a full season this year?
I think it's a little bit too early to tell. I mean, especially in the case of Mazara, he's only, 21, 22 years old.
Yeah.
So he got off to a good start, but he really struggled against left-handed pitching. So that's a challenge he's going to have to overcome. And he finished batting around 266, I guess it was. I think we have to be really, we have to temper our expectations with him because, again, he's so young. Naquin, I don't know where he's going to play, really. I mean, the playing time is going to be his biggest challenge. And the fact that he batted close to 300, he also had a BABIP over 400 last year. So that's going to come down to, I think, again, these two guys, again, with small sample sizes, and we've got to be really careful about drafting them too high.
For those of you guys who are maybe new to the advanced stats, BABIP means batting average of balls in play. So we're talking about, you know, there's a lot of luck in where balls fall. We've got exit velocities. We've got, you know, the angle that the ball is launched. And so we have an idea of what a player should hit. And when his BABIP is over 400, that screams regression. It says his batting average is very likely to come down, maybe quite a bit. So I definitely agree about Naquin. Now, Mazara is a player I'm especially fond of. Last year when the Rangers front office was raving about this 21-year-old having more power than Joey Gallo in spring training, I thought they were just trying to light a fire under a struggling Gallo. It turns out Mazara can really knock the ball around. I don't believe he's anywhere near his potential at this point, so I don't think we're going to see some huge breakout season. But for Dynasty Leagues, boy, do I love this kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got upside. I mean, another thing that kind of concerns me is a little bit is he's got a ground ball ratio of over 50%. So you don't expect a lot of power out of a guy who hits more than half of his batted balls on the ground. But yeah. Again, he's only 22 years old, so there's lots of time for him to develop.
Now, Ron, 2 years ago, everyone was all over the Byron Buxton bandwagon, myself included. He's had a few injuries since then, some big slumps, but his exit velocities really increased late last season. Do you expect him to take a big leap forward this year?
I think this may be the year. I mean, he's had a couple of false starts over the last couple of years, but I mean, he really looked good at the end of last year, and that's what you kind of look for. Now, he's still got some flaws. His contact rate is still, you know, around 60%, which is way too low, but man, the power skills, even the speed skills, I mean, this is a potential 30-30 player down the line, and we don't expect that to happen this year, but I think, you know, at age 23, this is the year where we start to see him take a step up.
Now, we know Buxton's going to steal a lot of bases if he stays on the field. Some other fellow sophomores, Tim Anderson and Jose Peraza for the Reds. Should fantasy owners rely on any of these two in multiple categories?
Probably not in multiple categories. They'll give you your bags. I mean, they're going to steal some bases. Anderson, I'm a little worried about because he doesn't walk very much, so his on-base average was barely around 300 last year. And, you know, you kind of look for the guys to get on base and who are going to steal bases. And if they're not getting on base at least at a 300, 330, 340 clip, that puts their bags at risk. So I'm worried about Anderson. And Peraza, similarly, he only walks about 3, 4% at a time, but he makes good contact, so that's a good thing. And, you know, again, young players, they're both 23, 24, so we hope to see them develop a little bit.
Now, Corey Seager was the real gem in last year's class. You talked about Carlos Correa having his sophomore slump. Do you think it happens to Seager this season?
I don't know. I don't think so. He looked really good last year. I mean, if there was anything to point a finger at, in the second half, his BABIP was up around 380, which is a little bit high, so you'd expect maybe his batting average to come down a little bit. So, I mean, if he doesn't hit 308, he hits 295, it's still a solid, solid player, and I think we get a future star in the making here. He's going to be 23 years old, 25 home runs, 300 batting average. God, I think he's going to be great.
He really surprised me last season. I was, I have to admit, I was talking down on him. I looked at his numbers in AAA after he was in all those, you know, Coors Field light parks, maybe even better than Coors Field. All these great parks down in the minor leagues in the Dodgers, and he was having these great stats, over 1,000 OPS. Then he gets up to AAA, Oklahoma City, 278, 332 on-base percentage. His OPS was under 800, and then he comes up and just dominates the major league. So, look, I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure if his skills really developed, if he got up to the big leagues and some of these older players taught him a few tricks or whatever it was, but he was really good.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at the numbers that he put up last year, and his OPS was near 900 for a good part of the season. So you got to love the guy. I mean, you just really do.
I can't help but just salivate when I compare Yulieski Gurriel's Cuban stats to Cespedes, Jose Dariel Abreu, before they came over and were MVP candidates. He batted 500 with two strikeouts all season. Then he took a bunch of time away from baseball. He performed fairly well on a bad hammy last fall. Why are all the experts so low on this guy?
I think partly is because he's 33 years old. I mean, there's you know, most players, no matter who they are, they're going to hit their physical peak around, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And I think he profiled more as a doubles hitter than a home run hitter as compared to guys like Cespedes and Abreu. So I think expectations will be more tempered for him and what his upside could possibly be. But yeah, I mean, in those small samples in the Cuban League, he put up phenomenal stats. I think we have to temper our expectations here.
Now, is there any chance that with his upside, he just takes a big step forward in terms of his MLB stats this year, ends up hitting the middle of the Astros lineup?
I don't know. I'm a little bit dubious. I think he's more of a 10 to 15 home run guy. I don't see him being a middle of the order guy now.
Now, Alex Bregman, perhaps the number one prospect in baseball before he was called up. Now, I didn't grade him here. My guy was Andrew Benintendi. Anyways, Bregman's going far higher in drafts than Aledmys Diaz, who was never a top 100 prospect. But am I crazy to think that Diaz is due for a stronger season again?
Crazy is such a strong word.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think you're crazy. But, you know, one of the things I look at with a lot of these guys who come out of nowhere, I mean, were they rated at all by the major prospect sources? You know, the Baseball HQ publishes the Minor League Baseball Analyst, and they cover about 1,000 players each year. Diaz wasn't even in the book last year. So Whoa. You have to wonder. Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder about that. He got, about 400 at-bats last year. He batted 300. I don't know that he's a true 300 hitter. I think he surprised a lot of people, clearly. I don't know if he's got the legs to keep that up. I mean, he's young enough. He's only going to be 26. But I probably would prefer looking at more of the guys who have been profiled as having higher ceilings. So I'm a little bit worried about a guy like Diaz who nobody saw coming. And we wonder whether this was just a small sample aberration.
You know, as a Cardinals fan, I was really hoping that they would take advantage of what Diaz was doing at the start of the year and sell high on him during the trade deadline for some extra pitching. Now, they didn't do that. They keep raving about this kid, how good they think his bat is, how he's going to continue to progress. They think he can hold down the forward at shortstop. I'm not sure about that. He did not look very good at shortstop last year. But I've got to say, I grew more impressed with him as the season went on. And Bregman, look, he is really good, but I'm not sure that he's ready yet. I guess we'll see. I think he's being overdrafted. I think someone will reach a little too high. I wouldn't mind taking him if he falls to me in the ninth round in a standard 10-team mixed league, but right now he's being drafted in the seventh round. That's too much for me.
Yeah, he's going around number 100 right now, which I think is a little bit high. But again, you know, it's the shiny new penny syndrome, and a lot of people are fascinated by what his potential could be and think they don't want to miss out. You know, it's the fear of missing out on these guys, so he gets drafted a little bit higher.
Now, three former high prospects, Orlando Arcia, Raul Mondesi, and Max Kepler, they're all outside standard league draft boards right now, but they've flashed some terrific tools. Are you going to have your eye on any of them in deeper leagues this season?
I think probably Kepler more than the others. I think he's a little bit more polished, a little bit more experienced. You know, I like the guys who struggle a little bit at the majors, get sent down, and then come back up and really show something. And that's what happened with Kepler last year, because it shows that, first of all, he's got the makeup to withstand knowing that the team lost faith in him for a little bit and then worked his way back. So I like seeing that in the young kid, and he was really terrific when he came back. As far as Arcia and Mondesi, I mean, they're very young. Arcia is only going to be 22. Mondesi was 20, 21. Both of them, very, very low on base averages. And since speed is a major part of their game, I don't think they're quite ready yet. I think they're probably a year or two away.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with those two. Kepler intrigues me. I mean, he's this guy that always had these loud skills. He came from Germany, hasn't been playing baseball that long, and he's really developed. I mean, if you look at his minor league numbers from year to year, each year he took a substantial jump in his numbers. Then he gets to the major leagues, and boy, he was impressive. He looks like he can be an all-star in this league. Now, I'm not saying this year in 2017. I'm saying maybe in 2 or 3 years, but just the fact that the upside's there and he's not being drafted, I think he's probably going to end up starting for a bad Twins team. I'm definitely going to have my eye on him. I'm interested. I'm probably not going to draft him unless it's a deeper league or an AL-only league, but like I said, I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, he's right now going close to 250, so really most people don't have their eye on him, but he definitely has the upside. And, you know, a guy who can hit 20, 25 home runs, bat maybe 270, 280, I mean, it's better than a top 250 player for sure.
Yeah, that's a nice piece. That's a Josh Willingham.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Wilson Contreras is going to be a catcher. He's going to be catcher eligible for sure. He has a lot of pop. He plays with a lot of flair, but do you think he's going to play enough to justify drafting him in the top 100?
I worry about that because the Cubs have both Montero and Schwarber who could catch. So basically they have three potential frontline catchers. You know, if any one of them struggles, someone else is there to step in. Contreras now, Baseball HQ is projecting him about 450 at-bats. I think that's a little bit high. I mean, if he gets that playing time, he's probably going to hit 20 home runs, maybe 25 on the outside. But he's the type of guy, again, another one of those guys who hits a lot of ground balls. So we're probably looking at more at league average power for him. But again, like you mentioned, the playing time is the biggest concern.
Yeah, I just see Kyle Schwarber and I think, what a disaster if they put him in the field. You know, they do have all these other pieces too. So I don't know, maybe Schwarber ends up on the bench a bunch. Maybe they give him a bunch of rest, Schwarber and Contreras. Maybe Contreras just gets 350 plate appearances. Now, that's great if he hits you 20 homers, but I'm not sure he's quite to that point yet where if he only gets 350, he's going to hit 20 homers. So he's one guy I'll be avoiding. I think that people see him and, you know, him just hitting the snot out of the ball and they think, yeah, if he gets 550 at-bats, he's going to hit me 35 homers. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. So I'm going to let someone else reach for him. It's not going to be me.
Yeah, definitely not. And clearly, how many catchers actually get 500 at-bats in a season? It just doesn't happen. So, yeah, it just doesn't happen.
Now, Ron, moving over to pitchers, let's start with Michael Fulmer. And his underlying stats just scream regression. His ERA, for instance, was on par with Justin Verlander, Jake Arrieta. But his xFIP, which really tells you the whole picture, was down below Tyler Duffy and Mike Leake. I'm avoiding him without a doubt. Where do you stand?
I think he's got a little bit more potential than that. He doesn't strike out a ton of batters. You know, usually you like to see a starting pitcher strike out at least 8 batters per 9 innings, and he's a little bit short of that. But he has pretty decent control. He allows a lot of ground balls. He's probably a guy who's going to have an ERA in the high 3s. But on a Detroit team, that's, you know, a decent team. It's not a bottom dweller by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
He's going to get, you know, 10 to 15 wins, I think, with an ERA maybe 3.75. You know, maybe he's your number 3 starter. I think he's probably is somewhere around there. But he's clearly not someone who you count on for a 3.06 ERA like he did last year.
Now, you know I love relievers. If you remember our conversation from last year, I love to build my pitching staff around these high K, low whip setup men with potential to take over a closer job. And there were 4 relievers last year who had dominant rookie campaigns. Oh, and Edwin Diaz, they proved that they can be closers. So they're obviously going to be high picks. Now, I see both Hector Neris and Kyle Bearclaw doing that this year, taking over the closer job and never looking back. Do you think all 4 of these guys can be relied upon for fantasy in 2017?
Well, Diaz, no, for sure. I mean, they've definitely shown that they've got the goods. With Bearclaw and Neris, both of them have the same problem that they need to get under control, and that is control. I mean, Bearclaw was walking 4 or 5 batters per 9 innings. Neris was also walking 3.5 to 4 batters per 9 innings. That's really high for a closer. Bearclaw has got like a 52% ground ball rate, which is great for a closer. So they've got these little things there that they need to overcome before they take that next step up. You know, you compare them to Diaz and O, who've got those things under control, and they've been very, very successful in their roles. But clearly, they've got the skills. They're both in their late 20s, which is a great age to kind of put the package together. So I think it's potential. The potential is there, but they've got to take that next step.
Now, for those of you listening who maybe don't follow the setup men or the relievers in baseball very much, go take a look at Bearclaw's stats. 72 innings, 45 hits, 113 strikeouts. I mean, this is a guy that if he gets his command together, he's going to be one of the most electric pitchers in baseball.
I mean, it's incredible. 14 strikeouts per nine innings. That's
like video game stats.
Yeah, really. Exactly. That's exactly what that is.
Now, there's four high upside flamethrowers going the middle rounds of drafts. Julio Urias, Jameson Taillon, John Gray, and Sean Mania. I love Sean Mania. He was so good at the end of last season. I remember before he got hurt, there was talk about him going 1.1 in his draft that season. He kind of fell off the board. They took a chance on him, and he turned out really well. Are you going to be targeting any of these four guys in your drafts this year?
Oh, I'm completely in your park with the Mania. I think he's a great pitcher. He's got huge upside. He's in a great ballpark for his skills. And of those four, he's being drafted the highest. I think close to the highest right now, which makes sense because he has that upside. He strikes out batters. He's got good control. Again, these are not top elite players, but they're on the verge. They're on the precipice of taking that next step up. I like him. I like Taillon a little bit. The other two are a little bit younger. I worry about John Gray in Colorado. You know, no matter what he does there, it's still Colorado, so you have to be concerned about that. And Urias, you know, he's only 20 years old. You have to think the Dodgers are not going to let him go really deep in games.
Agreed.
So you really can't plan on more than, you know, maybe 140, 150 innings for him this year. So that takes away some of his value. But, yeah, Mania, God, I think he's a future superstar.
Urias is going to be really, really good. Watch this kid pitch. He's a delight. Now, Mania, he's 6'5", 245 lefty, and if that's not enough, his nickname is Baby Giraffe. He grows this gnarly mustache. He's just a lot of fun. I really like the kid, and like I said, he was lights out at the end of last season. It was only a matter of time, and I think this season he takes a big step forward. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be any kind of Cy Young candidate this year, but I think it's in his future, and I'll say this about Gray. If he were pitching for any other team besides the Rockies and maybe the Diamondbacks, I'd expect him to win a Cy Young someday. Like, expect him. This kid, he's really just quite good.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, he strikes out 10 batters per nine innings. He's got good control, but he has to face that ballpark, and that's always going to be a struggle.
A few other former top 20 prospects, and I guess they're still kind of right in that boat because we didn't see much of them last year. Blake Snell, former minor league pitcher of the year. Archie Bradley, who really fell off two seasons ago. He started to come back a little bit last season. It got kind of ugly, but he's got a lot of talent. Dylan Bundy, former top five prospect, had some arm problems. He's been fighting back from those. And Jose Berrios, who we saw some highlights where he can be really good. Now, his command was not anywhere near what you'd expect for a fantasy relevant player, but all four of these guys, lots of skill. Do you see any of them having breakout seasons this year?
I don't know about a breakout, but I think Blake Snell probably has the best potential to take a step up and put up a season that shows a lot of growth as compared to last year. I mean, he had an ERA about 3.50 last year. I think he can be even better than that. He was striking out about 10 batters per nine. He keeps the ball in the park, which is really important. So I like him probably best out of the four. But like you said, all of them have skills, and they just need to put it together. And they're all young, so, I mean, they've got time.
Yeah, I would keep all these guys on your radar, especially Dylan Bundy. I mean, you look at the changes that he made in the second half. In the first half, his batting average against .305, a big slugging percentage, lots of walks. In the second half, all the way down to .231. Now, we gave up a lot more homers in the second half, but this is a guy, big strikeout potential, former top five prospect. So if he is fully recovered and he's himself, we're talking about another guy who could be a Cy Young candidate some year. Now, I'm not going to expect it like I would with a Sean Mania, but lots of skill with this guy, so keep him on your radar. And if you're in deeper leagues, maybe take a shot on him.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I mean, you remember the numbers Bundy put up a few years ago in the minors where
amazing.
Touched. Yeah, I mean, they couldn't touch him at all. And
37 scoreless innings?
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, the injury bug hit, and he's been, you know, back and forth for the last few years. But from a skills basis, I mean, this guy probably has the biggest upside of the four we're talking about.
Yeah. Now, there's five starters that I grade all about in the same tier. I'm not really excited about any of them. Christopher Davinsky, he had pretty good stats, but, you know, he's not going to strike out a bunch of guys. Zach Davies, Joe Musgrove, who when he came up was great. I think some people are going to reach on him. I'm not real excited. And then we've got Tyler Anderson and Junior Guerrero, who are being drafted around the 20th round. Now, what separates Anderson and Guerrero from the others?
You know something? I kind of looked at that, and it's really hard to figure it out. The only thing I can think of is that Guerrero had a 2.81 ERA and went 9-3 for a terrible Milwaukee team. So there's something that seems good there, but his peripherals, his support stats are nothing to write home about. They're of these five pitchers, they're probably near the bottom. Plus the fact he's 31 years old, so there's really nothing to look forward to. Why he's being drafted so high is beyond me. And with Tyler Anderson, again, a 3.50 ERA, so I mean of this group, one of the lower ERAs, but here again, a Colorado pitcher. So I don't know what the excitement is about. Really, of all these pitchers, the one with the best skills is probably Devinsky, but there's no place in the rotation for him in Houston. I mean, if he was a starter, we might be talking about him a little bit more, but needless to say, every team is going to go through their injuries, and he probably will get a chance at some point to start. But right now, he's part of the bullpen, and as long as he's there, you're not going to want to draft him that high.
I'm avoiding all five of these guys. I mean, we have to talk about them because they're fantasy relevant. They really are. But, you know, people are going to be looking at these ERAs and they're going to say, hey, maybe this kid's really good. I don't know much about these young rookies, these sophomores. So maybe I should just draft them and take a chance. If you're taking a chance on any of these five guys, I just don't think there's any upside there. I mean, maybe they'll reproduce what they did last year, but I think even that's a stretch. I think all five of them are due for some regression, especially Anderson playing in Coors Field.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Unless you're in an AL or an NL only league, I'd be staying far away from these guys.
Now, finally, is Kenta Maeda a safe bet to maintain his strong numbers from last season, or are you better off grabbing an upside arm like maybe Steven Matz?
I think Maeda is okay. I think he's fine. I mean, his ERA spiked in the second half, but that was all because of his home run to fly ball rate was a little bit off. It rose from 9% to 15%. But his skills actually got better as the season went on. So I think he's a very safe bet. Matz has got good skills. He's got high upside, but he's battled injuries through his entire career, even in the minors. So I worry about that. I think Maeda is a much safer bet, at least for this year.
Now, your Babs project, before I let you run, I've got to ask you about it because it is just so interesting to me. Can you explain this to our listeners a little bit and then maybe give us one or two examples of how they can use this in your fantasy leagues?
Sure. You know, gosh, I've been doing this for so long, and the focus for us is always to look at how can we do a better job of forecasting player performance. And a lot of the work I've done during my career is trying to find better projections models. But the more I do it, the more I realize that the error bars are so wide that you can never be precise enough to really project the players to help your team. It's really difficult to do. So I came up with this concept called the Broad Assessment Balance Sheet, which abbreviated as BABS. And BABS says we should do several things. First, we should assess skill in very, very broad terms. You know, try to pull away from the numbers a little bit. Otherwise, we get caught up in these error bars. And then we need to separate the skill from the risk. You know, we know a player like Giancarlo Stanton has great skill, but it's because of the risk of injury that he gets pushed down on draft boards. But if we separate the skill and the risk, we can still look at his upside and be able to evaluate it better. And Babs also set some targets for your roster in a different way as well. I think last year, one of the best examples of how Babs works is that Buster Posey and Jonathan Lucroy had the exact same skills value according to Babs. They had basically the same skill set. They were no different. And the only difference between the two players was that Lucroy had a higher injury risk. So if you had decided going into your draft to assume that injury risk as part of your risk budget, which is also a part of Babs, then you might have gotten a great profit of drafting Lucroy instead of Posey. And I think that's where the real value is in using this system. So it's a different way of looking at things. And I think it really helps us see players in a completely different light.
That's a perfect example. Ron, I love that you created Babs. I just I can't stop learning as much as I possibly can about baseball. And the way that you look at things from a different light, it's impressive to me. And it also has helped me a ton over the years, and it's just a blast. Ron, it's a blast talking to you. I appreciate all the insight you gave today, and looking forward to next time.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on. It's been my pleasure.
It's our pleasure. Take care. Now, for those of you listening in, here's what I want you to do. Go to iTunes and hit the subscribe button for our podcast, because we've got a lot of great episodes coming up later this season. We just built the schedule. We're going to be talking about prospects next week with Mike Rosenbaum. I'm really excited about that one because you guys know I love prospects. And we're going to be hitting up all the big rookies. We've got some other big shows coming. We're going to finish with starting pitchers, relief pitchers, and catchers rankings. And then we're going to go into the full preseason episodes. We're going to be doing two or three shows a week until the start of the season. And look, this is a really new show, so I'm just going to be straightforward with you. We need some help getting exposure. Please just take a few seconds, subscribe on iTunes, tell your friends about the show. It really helps us out, and I appreciate it a ton. Thanks for listening. And enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.